And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Want to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy to write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, whatever you need to write down on this 2nd of February, 2017. And this year we are celebrating the 20th year of the Earth First Update. So celebrate with us. Let somebody know about the Earth First Update and get them involved. Starting on Monday, or very shortly thereafter, February 7th through the 14th, is the Hudson Valley Earth First Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous. It's being held in the Catskill Mountains in the Hudson River watershed. Wasn't able to find out exactly how to get there, but if you're going, and you probably should be on the move. Only a few more days left. They're going to be hosting 75 or more people. And they're going to have important movement discussions, a space to plug into existing campaigns and projects, and all that stuff. You might want to go to Hudson Valley Earth First and check out where the 2017 Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous is, February 7th through the 14th. And the Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action is starting February 14th. Mark your calendars and join them for their Week of Action. They're planning events in southwestern Montana towns, and there will be a national event for everyone. We'll welcome your ideas, and we need your energy and participation. The tentative schedule, and I haven't updated this, we'll update it next week as we get closer to the event. Tuesday, February 14th, there'll be a rally in Bozeman, Montana. Wednesday, February 15th, a march and candlelight vigil in Gardner, Montana. Thursday, February 16th, is the National Call-In Day of Action across the nation, and they'll also have activities at the Buffalo Field Campaign headquarters. They'll have trainings in nonviolence and Know Your Rights in West Yellowstone. Friday, February 17th, there'll be a special event in Helena, Montana. Saturday and Sunday, February 18th and 19th, there'll be rallies in West Yellowstone, Montana, with storytelling, culture sharing, and other activities at the Buffalo Field Campaign headquarters. And Monday, February 20th, there'll be a rally in Big Sky, Montana. They ask you to join them at any or all of their events. Tell your friends and bring them with you. If you are able to come for the full week and would like to stay with the Buffalo Field Campaign, please RSVP to Stephanie at media@buffalofieldcampaign.org or McKinsey@volunteer@buffalofieldcampaign.org so that they can make accommodations for your sleeping space and food. Please bring your own bedding, basically a sleeping bag and a pillow. For more details and exact times, please visit their events calendar at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Yellowstone National Park has captured nearly 400 of the country's last wild buffalo. The world's first national park intends to consign America's first national mammal to slaughter, all in the name of appeasing the unfounded fears and deep-rooted prejudices of Montana's cattle industry. Montana Governor Steve Bullock's executive order remains in place and is stalling the buffalo's slaughter. Unfortunately, it is not preventing their capture. We are asking everyone to call 307-344-2002. That's 307-344-2002, and insist that Yellowstone honor the national mammal by releasing all captured buffalo. We also need you to contact Governor Bullock and Montana and urge them to repeal MCA 81-2-120 and respect all wild buffalo like they respect the wild elk in Montana. As Yellowstone officials are busy trapping America's national mammal for slaughter, those buffalo who are able to slip by the capture facility are being gunned down just a mile north of the trap, just across Yellowstone's northern boundary. This so-called hunt is being driven by the same forces who crafted the Interagency Bison Management Plan, Montana livestock interests. Though some hunters have been unsuccessful because Yellowstone is trapping their prey, more than 200 buffalo have already been killed. Hunting animals from a vulnerable and diminishing population in an incredibly crowded landscape offers the buffalo very little chance of survival and puts hunters in competition with hundreds of others as they race against the trap. It is a recipe for extermination. While some hunters don't seem to mind being part of such chaos, many are growing increasingly uncomfortable, if not disgusted, with the whole management scheme. The demand for more buffalo on a larger landscape is growing, especially from within the tribes. There have been a few hunters who received tags to kill buffalo, but after visiting Buffalo Field Campaign's website and learning the truth, they made the decision not to hunt. As you can see in a recent Buffalo Field Campaign video, Montana's buffalo hunt is yet another means of slaughtering this national treasure. There's something very wrong when every buffalo who migrates from Yellowstone into Montana must face either the rifle or the trap. Many of the buffalo are being killed are the matriarchs of family groups. These are the wise elders who know where to find food, water, and how to navigate the land through various seasons in order to survive. They are the teachers, leaders, and protectors. Such indiscriminate killing is having severe negative impacts on the buffalo herd structures, behavior, and family dynamics. Contrast Yellowstone and Montana's behavior towards the world's most important buffalo herds with that of Alaska's fish and game and the people of western Alaska. Right now they are mourning, yes, mourning, the death of Buffalo 124, a female buffalo who was part of the Alaska Wood Buffalo Restoration Project. She was illegally killed by a hunter near the village of Quinhagak. Her death is a heavy blow to the restoration effort because their numbers are few and her importance and valuable knowledge to the success of the herd and future generations is understood. She was known for her extensive exploration of the Yukon and surrounding areas, teaching other buffalo as matriarchs do. And here in the lower 48, Yellowstone and Montana aim to kill these very same leaders to drive down the last continuously wild buffalo herds who have survived here for long ages. And you can find more information out at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember, the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day to protect the last wild buffalo on the planet. And suction dredge issues are heating up in Washington and Oregon in this story from Cascadia Wildlands. The suction dredge mining issue is heating up in Washington and Oregon, and we wanted to let you know about a chance for you to take action in defense of wild salmon, clean water, and iconic rivers. Every summer, recreational miners strike out into hundreds of Cascadia's rivers and streams hunting for gold. Motorized suction dredge mining is a technique that vacuums up streambed gravel all the way down to bedrock. In the process, salmon and trout eggs are killed, spawning habitat is destroyed, and the water is polluted with plumes of sediment and resuspended mercury and other heavy metals. Suction dredge mining is so destructive, the practice is banned in California. This has caused a mini gold rush into Washington and Oregon. Washington is currently the Wild West of recreational mining with almost no regulation. So, on January 10th, we filed a notice of intent to sue the state of Washington under the Endangered Species Act and submitted a notice of violation under the Clean Water Act. Meanwhile, in the State House, House Bill 1077 and House Bill 1106 have been introduced to bring Washington into the 21st century of regulating recreational mining. We were in Olympia last week testifying in support of those bills. In Oregon, Senate Bill 3 has been introduced and will lock in permanent protections and a stringent regulatory regime for suction dredge mining in Oregon's iconic waterways. This bill is the accumulation of several years of hard work and advocacy by Cascadia Wildlands staff and members. Thank you for your support of this campaign. The end is in sight. You can take action on this important issue right now by sending a message to your local representatives in Oregon and Washington or go to their website to take action. Your message will have even more impact if you add a personal touch. Thank you for keeping it wild. Gabriel Scott, in-house counsel for Cascadia Wildlands, and you can visit their webpage at www.cascwild.org. That's cascwild.org. And the Congo has been found to hold the world's largest tropical peatland in this story from Environment News Service. An extensive peatland in the Congo Basin has been mapped for the first time, showing it to be the largest such tropical peatland in the world, covering an area larger than England. The new study found that the Cuvette Centrale peatlands in the swamps of central Congo Basin, unknown just 5 years ago, cover 145,500 square kilometers. That's about 56,000 square miles. The peat locks in 30 billion tons of carbon, making the region one of the most carbon-rich ecosystems on Earth. Peat is an organic wetland soil made from partly decomposed plant debris. Found most commonly in cool environments, peatlands cover 3-5% of the Earth's surface, but store over 30% of all soil carbon. Healthy peatlands act as carbon sinks, removing the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide from the atmosphere through plant growth. Not just important for carbon storage, the Congo Basin swamps are also refuges for endangered species, including lowland gorillas and forest elephants. Co-leaders of the study, Professor Simon Lewis and Dr. Greta Darke of the University of Leeds School of Geography, first discovered the peatlands during fieldwork in the Congo Basin in 2012. Dr. Darke is also with the University College of London. "We have found 30 billion tons of carbon that nobody knew existed," said Professor Lewis. "The peat covers only 4% of the whole Congo Basin, but stores the same amount of carbon below ground that is stored in trees above ground, covering the other 96%. "Our new peatland map is the first step in understanding this vast ecosystem," he said. "These swamp forests have been wrongly classified on all previous maps," Lewis added. "Our research shows that the peat in the central Congo Basin covers a colossal amount of land. It is 16 times larger than the previous estimate and is the single largest peatland complex found anywhere in the tropics. These peatlands hold nearly 30% of the world's tropical peatland carbon. That's about 20 years of fossil fuel emissions of the United States of America," he said. "The sheer expanse of these peatlands makes Central Africa home to the world's most extensive peatland complex," Dr. Darke said. "It is astonishing that in 2016 discoveries like this can still be made." The United Kingdom Congolese research team spent 3 years exploring remote tropical swamp forests to find samples of peat for laboratory analysis. Their research paper, titled "Age, Extent, and Carbon Storage of the Central Congo Basin Peatland Complex," was published in the January 11th issue of the journal Nature. Their study combined peat analysis with satellite data to estimate the Congo Basin peatlands store the equivalent of 3 years of the world's total fossil fuel emissions. The peat may be vulnerable to the effects of climate change in a couple of ways. If rising temperatures increase evaporation or if average rainfall is reduced, then the peat begins to dry out. At this point, the peat would begin to release its carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Year-round waterlogging is needed for peat to form in the tropics. If peatlands dry out, either through changes in land use such as drainage for agriculture or reduced rainfall, further decomposition resumes, releasing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Professor Lewis said, "Peatlands are the only resource in the fight against climate change when left intact, so maintaining large stores of carbon in undisturbed peatlands should be a priority." The new results show that carbon has been building up in the Congo Basin's peat for nearly 11,000 years. If the Congo Basin peatland complex was to be destroyed, this would release billions of tons of carbon dioxide into our atmosphere, Lewis warned. And turning to biological diversity news, public records have been ordered on EPA's approval of toxic pesticides. The Center for Biological Diversity has submitted a Freedom of Information Act request demanding the release of public records on the Environmental Protection Agency's sudden decision to expand its approval of Enlist Duo, a highly toxic pesticide, despite an earlier decision to revoke approval after deeming the pesticide too harmful. Specifically, a synergistic interaction between the pesticide's two main components can greatly increase its harm to non-target plants, like neighboring crops and endangered species. and tell Congress not to mess with wolf recovery. U.S. Senators Tammy Baldwin and Amy Klobuchar have introduced a new bill to strip federal protection from wolves in Wyoming and the Great Lakes region, and we need your help to stop it. The bill is an ugly political ploy that will end with thousands of dead wolves and do serious damage to one of America's most important endangered species success stories. After the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies sued, federal judges overturned a series of bad decisions to prematurely remove Endangered Species Act protection from wolves. But with language explicitly preventing further judicial review, the new bill would reverse these court orders, end federal wolf protection, and undermine the basic rule of law and rights of the citizens to challenge illegal government actions. Act now to demand that Congress let science and law govern wolf recovery, not politics. And two pesticides now threaten 97% of endangered species. A new report from the Environmental Protection Agency says 97% of the 1,800 species that are protected under the Endangered Species Act, from bears to birds to frogs, are likely to be harmed by two of the most common pesticides, namely malathion and chlorpyrifos. The pesticide diazinon is likely to hurt another 78%. We're now getting a far better picture of the risks pesticides pose to endangered wildlife, said Center scientist Nathan Donnelly. The next step should be protecting them and public health. And recovery of grizzly bears in the North Cascades. Grizzly bear numbers in the Cascades are dismal. Fewer than 10 bears likely live in the whole region. So it's good news that the National Park Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are considering increasing the North Cascades grizzly population in Washington by moving in bears from other populations. In the draft plan, the federal agencies propose bringing bears from Montana or British Columbia to increase the Cascade population to 200. We're happy to see the agencies are taking a step in the right direction to restore grizzly bears to the North Cascades, said Andrea Santarciere, a senior attorney with the center. Without a helping hand, grizzly bears are likely to disappear from the Pacific Northwest. And San Diego Agreement is helping burrowing owls and solar energy. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies secured an agreement with private developers that will protect imperiled burrowing owls and unique vernal pool species, increase renewable solar energy, and conserve wildlife habitat in a billion-dollar development of San Diego's Brownfield Municipal Airport. The project, near the Mexico border in Otay Mesa, will include on-site and off-site solar energy and a program with the San Diego Zoo Institute for Conservation Research to help rebuild Otay Mesa's struggling burrowing owl population. This agreement provides an innovative strategy for reestablishing burrowing owls throughout San Diego County, said the center's Jonathan Evans. It creates an effective tool to allow off-site mitigation of greenhouse gases with rooftop solar in communities most harmed by air pollution from fossil fuels. And a rare forest carnivore is belatedly on the track for protection. The Fish and Wildlife Service is considering protecting northern Rockies fishers, cat-like members of the weasel family clinging to survival in northern Idaho and Montana under the Endangered Species Act. Now the agency, whose decision is due by September 30th, is seeking public comment to make the call. Trapping of wolves, bobcats, and other species has been on the rise in Idaho and Montana, and fishers caught by accident have suffered. The Center for Biological Diversity petitioned to protect them in 2013. The service is now more than 2 years late in making its determination. And a lawsuit has been launched to save endangered fish from gold mining. The center and its allies have filed an intent to sue the state of Washington for allowing highly destructive suction dredge mining, a recreational gold mining technique in water areas crucial to endangered salmon and steelhead trout. Suction dredge mining uses large gas-powered vacuums to suck up gravel from the bottoms of rivers and streams in search of gold flakes, targeting gravel beds critical to salmon reproduction. They also pollute waterways with toxic mercury, cloud streams with sediment, kill endangered fish, and destroy cultural resources. And a suit has been launched to save wolves and lynx from a copper mine. The Center for Biological Diversity and Earthworks have filed a notice of intent to sue the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Forest Service for their approval of the Polymet open pit copper mine in Minnesota's Superior National Forest in violation of the Endangered Species Act. The mine would destroy nearly 4,000 acres of habitat for federally protected gray wolves and Canada lynx, as well as hundreds of acres of high-quality wetlands, and risk long-term water pollution of the Lake Superior watershed. A century of ore mining has already fragmented habitat for wolves and lynx in this region, so they can't tolerate a new wave of open-pit copper mining, said Center Attorney Mark Fink. The impacts are just too severe to let this proceed. And if you want more information, go to the website www.biologicaldiversity.org. And the largest coal mine in the West may close in this story by Bobby McGill of Climate Central, as found on Live Science. The largest coal-fired power plant in the West, one of the biggest climate polluters of the nation, will close later this year, a major symbolic blow to the future of coal as the backbone of America's electric power grid. The owner of Arizona's Navajo Generating Station northeast of the Grand Canyon announced in early January that low natural gas prices and the rising costs of generating electricity using coal make it too expensive to operate the plant. A decision on the plant's fate is expected this spring. Coal-fired power plants, once the workhorse of the nation's electricity grid, are the largest individual climate polluters in the country, and they're falling victim to coal's biggest competitor, plentiful cheap natural gas flooding the country because of fracking. It's a trend all across the nation, even as President Trump tries to begin to make good on his campaign process to revitalize America's declining coal fields while dismissing the threat they pose to climate. The Navajo plant may soon be the West's largest victim of the move towards natural gas. It is America's seventh largest single source of carbon dioxide emissions driving climate change. Its closure would relieve Arizona of a source of pollution long targeted by federal regulators for contributing to regional haze and poor air quality over the Grand Canyon. And the Earth has set a record temperature for the third straight year in this story by Justin Gillis of the New York Times. Marking another milestone for the changing planet, scientists reported that the Earth has reached its highest temperature on record in 2016, trouncing a record set only a year earlier, which beat one set in 2014. This is the first time in the modern era of global warming that temperatures have blown past the previous record 3 years in a row. The findings come just 2 days after the inauguration of an American president who has called global warming a Chinese plot and vowed to roll back his predecessor's efforts to cut emissions of heat-trapping gases. In reality, the Earth is heating up, a point long beyond serious scientific dispute, but one becoming more evident as the records keep falling. Temperatures are heading towards levels that many experts believe will pose a profound threat to both the natural world and to human civilization. In 2015 and 16, the planetary warning was intensified by a weather pattern known as El Niño, in which the Pacific Ocean released a huge burst of energy and water vapor into the atmosphere. But the bigger factor in setting records was the long-term trend of rising temperatures, which scientists say is being driven by increasing levels of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. A single warm year is something of a curiosity, said Deke Arndt, chief of global climate monitoring at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. It's really the trend and the fact that we're punching at the ceiling every year now that is the real indicator that we're undergoing big changes. The heat extremes were especially pervasive in the Arctic, with temperatures in the fall running 20 to 30 degrees Fahrenheit above the normal across large stretches of the Arctic Ocean. Sea ice in that region has been in precipitous decline for years, and Arctic communities are already wrestling with enormous problems such as rapid coastal erosion caused by the changing climate. What's going on in the Arctic is actually very impressive. This year was ridiculously off the chart, said Gavin A. Schmidt, head of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies in Manhattan, a unit of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration that tracks global temperatures. But the Arctic people are hardly alone in feeling the heat. Drought and starvation afflicted Africa. On May 19th, the people in the town of Falodi lived through the hottest day on record in recorded history of India, 123.8 degrees Fahrenheit. El Nino has now ended, and climate scientists almost universally expect 2017 to be cooler than the year before. But the scale of the heat burst has been startling to many experts, and some of them fear an extended era of global warming could be at hand over the next few years. Even as current temperatures rising, billions of tons of land ice are melting or sliding into the ocean. The sea is also absorbing most of the heat trapped by human emissions. Those factors are causing the ocean to rise at what appears to be an accelerating pace, and coastal communities in the United States are beginning to spend billions to fight increased tidal flooding. Their pleas for help from Congress have been largely ignored. The finding that a record has been set for a third year in a row was released by three government agencies, two of them American and one British, that track measurements made by ships, buoys, and land-based weather stations. They analyze the figures to correct for known problems, producing an annual average temperature of the surface of the Earth. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, hopefully on 101.3 FM very shortly, and always at www.freakradio.org. You can hear a rebroadcast of this show on Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can tune in to WNMB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 a.m. for the Earth First Update. KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. There's a couple of stations in the Central Valley. Unfortunately, I was unable to get to my computer this afternoon to bring those in, but I will get them on the list next week. And Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California, sometimes plays the Earth First Update, but you can always find it at the radioforall.net website, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. That's radio4all.net. Please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening. I'm Uncle Dennis. Please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.